On this episode of Still Loading. Hey guys, welcome back to Still Loading. With me this week, I have my friend Pete.
Oh, hello.
And Jay.
Hi, my name is Jay. Thank you for having me, Josh.
You're so welcome, sir. How was the trip over here?
You could have had millions of different people on your podcast and you decided to have me.
I don't think I even know a million people.
Well, you need to step your shit up. That's what
you need to do. So today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about fighting games, competitive fighting games, and just kind of, you know, anything in that vein. So Jay here has played a good chunk of fighting games competitively at one point in his life or another. Mm-hmm. Jay, what's the full, not a full list, but at least a pretty decent sized list of games that you've played in tournaments?
In alphabetical order.
Yeah. In tournament play, I guess I've been, my first tournament was in high school, so I guess that's about 8 years. I started in Super Smash Bros. Melee. I've played Naruto GNT4. This is just basic anime type kind of games. Let me think. Street Fighter 4, obviously. Soul Calibur 4 and 5. Those are the main ones that I play and have been playing for quite some time. And I just mix around with the ones that are most current. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the ones that I do.
All right. So you have... All right. Just so I can remember because I have a horrible memory. Mm-hmm. You have Smash, mm-hmm. Melee, not Brawl, I take it.
I did play Brawl competitively for the first few months and then I kind of realized that it wasn't really the game for me. That's when Street Fighter 4 came out back in 2009 and the fighting game community really went into a boon, so to speak, and so I just decided to transition to more traditional fighters.
All right. So it was Smash and then Naruto GT.
Oh, GNT4. Genki Ninja Tyson.
Gekito Ninja Tyson 4.
Yeah, that's it.
He's got it.
Yeah, he played with me.
And so then there's that, and then you went to Street Fighter 4 and then eventually Soul Calibur 4 and 5.
That's right.
Okay. So what was it like with... Like when you first started playing, what was the Smash community like?
The Smash community, I can only say for my own personal experience. So if anybody listening has had a different kind of reaction to the Smash community, they're more than willing to disagree. But Smash community was really, it was really awful. It was a lot of... Smash was really known for being a kid's game at that point, and I felt that that kind of... was expressed in the people's personalities when I was dealing with them. I found them to be a little bit immature, a little bit petty. But at the same time, I was just a kid, and I was initially learning. I remember one of my first reactions like when I went to like my first Smash tournament was, so I'm in high school, and everybody's like a little bit older than me, but because they're not in school anymore, they I viewed them as like... I don't know,
God's
a different generation.
Men.
So I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, look at me. I'm hanging with all these adults. I must be a wise old soul. And then I eventually realized, no, it's not that, like, I'm, like, much more mature than my age. All these people are just stunted little teenagers. They're down at my level. I'm not up at theirs. And then that happened for a few years, and then I guess... With the Soul Calibur community, the Soul Calibur as a game in and of itself is really the thing that drew me towards it. To be honest, I'm not much of a fan of the communities that I'm involved with in general. It's really just about the gameplay. It's really about competing for me.
Well, that would make the most sense anyway, because if you don't like the game, why would you compete in it? You know, like
because it's popular and it gets you a lot of money.
That's sad, though. That's just sad.
A lot of stuff in the world is sad, Josh. It's not... it is what it is.
So then back to Smash. I know, Pete, you did not... I don't know if you played with Jay during that time, but I know you did, like... tournaments where you could win money, but usually at, like, conventions and stuff.
Well, when we were both at college together, there was, like, a game room, and that's where I was introduced into the fact that people actually did play things competitively, because I had no idea. I guess the first one that I noticed people playing was... Smash Brothers in the game room, and that's probably how I met Jay.
Yeah, I mean, the Monco game room was really where I learned my chops. I was aware of the concept.
Monco, for those who don't know, is a community college in our area.
We learned... I learned kind of the basics, and I got... I got an idea of all the people, like, I actually met people who were interested in the same thing. Before then, that was right around about the time that YouTube was coming out, and I got an idea that people were able to play these kinds of things competitively, but it wasn't until the game room that I actually met people face-to-face.
Who did play them competitively.
Exactly.
Wasn't Chris Carlin one of them, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the one who was initially the overwhelmingly better player than all of us. And, you know, it's just the competitive edge wanting to beat the person.
Best person in the room.
Exactly.
I remember, because I met you guys at the game room, mostly Pete. I didn't know you too well then. But I just remember going in there and watching, like, the tournament. Well, not really tournaments. There's no tournaments, but everyone playing. The gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how everyone was really competitive, but in an actual fun way, I remember. I mean, some people were douchebags. I won't lie.
Well, sure. I mean, you're going to get that with any kind of social group. It's
especially something competitive.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I've always noticed in things with video games or, like, more kind of geek culture-esque areas, what's anything, it almost turns into a nerd-off. Like, who knows more about a given subject than anybody else?
Yeah.
Oh, like, what is it? Like, even the other day, I went to see a live show. There's two guys behind me. I went to see Kevin Smith live. Mm-hmm. There's two guys talking to me, doing what I call their version of nerd-off. They were reciting the alphabet forwards and backwards, and then the periodic table.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I'm just like, what's why?
It's a thing to do, I suppose.
It's a nerd off in my I call it.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get that with a lot of the nerd culture nowadays. Fighting games are no exception. But at the same time, you just have to hope that you're going to meet people that are of quality, people that you can both learn stuff from and be able to hang out with.
So then what was some of the strategies that you got from, like, that you learned while at the game room before you went to any tournaments? Like, or just in general, what are some strategies for Melee?
Well, basic fighting game fundamentals. I mean, Smash is different than a traditional fighter. I'm not even sure if you would classify it as a fighting game. It's really more of a party game. It has certain things about it that make it different. It doesn't work with life bars. It works with percentages. It doesn't work with taking somebody's life bar down to zero. It turns it into knocking somebody off the stage.
Yeah.
So it is ever so slightly different, which makes it a little bit harder to describe. But it's really just the concept of, like, spacing, of safety, of punishing, like, that kind of stuff. Fighting game fundamentals just in general. And then mind games on top of that.
Yeah. Pete, what were some strategies? I mean, I know, you, like I said, you didn't play competitively, but what were some strategies? Because you always tell me these ridiculous stories of how you'd play and, like, beat the best player because you would have some weird strategy that they didn't know how to counter.
I don't know about... in Smash, I never took it too seriously because I would just... Like, I wasn't that good at it, and I didn't have the technical hand skill to do what people called wave dashing, which was kind of a... that's what allowed Smash, Melee in particular, to be, like, a competitive game, I think.
That and L-canceling, yeah.
L-canceling would be, like, if you're falling and you hit the L button as you hit the ground, it cancels
out. Essentially just takes half of the lag time after a move in the air and just cuts it in half, so you're just a hell of a lot faster.
So, like, if you know Ganondorf's, like, down smash in the air where he does that stomp?
Yeah.
If you do that and then hit the ground, it's so many frames of him, like, landing, standing, straight, where somebody could just
hit you.
But if you L cancel it, you hit, and then you're immediately, you can just move again and do stuff.
Mm-hmm. So it would make all the slow, powerful characters actually dangerous because they would.
Well, it also makes the faster characters even faster.
Yeah.
It really helps everybody.
Well, because wasn't the top tier character Falco in that game for a while? I don't know if it's
Melee. A little bit of a while. Not so much anymore. Melee isn't that balanced of a game. If you treat it as like a 6 or 7 character game, then it's pretty competitive. But outside of that 6 or 7, you're really going to start having difficulty with. Josh is trying to shoo away a cat.
He's fine. He has some input. I don't know if you know this, but he's played.
What's his name again?
Marcel.
Mango.
Mango Marcel. Yeah.
But yeah. Falco's one of the best characters. Fox is pretty much the best. And then you have Sheik, and Marth, and Jigglypuff. And then a handful of characters.
I loved playing Jigglypuff because I would never play. That was like my screw around.
Jigglypuff ruined
character.
The game for a certain amount of time.
Really?
Because
of the down B?
No.
Or it's regular. Like the thing I always used was the right, like just normal B, like not any direction. I would just hold it and then choose the direction. You know, is the spin up charge and then charge them off.
It was really just the fact that Jigglypuff is a very difficult character to corral into certain situations, and his Jigglypuff's spacing. Should I explain the concept of spacing?
I'm going to see. I honestly have no clue.
It's going to be very difficult to do it without a visual context, but the concept of spacing is just that. So you have two characters, and just try to picture them on a plane, and just. You have, the idea is that they have moves that have hitboxes, aka just, you know, certain parts of the screen that when they throw out a move, it's going to indicate that it's going to hit them, right?
Yeah.
And so they have a certain amount of range to their attacks. The other person has the exact same thing. So the idea is to maneuver yourself to where you get into your opponent's space and you're able to hit them and then immediately come back out
so they
before they can hit you back. And that's really the concept of spacing, is just dancing around your opponent's hitboxes while making sure that, you know, you do as much damage to them as possible without getting punished as much as...
See, that's crazy. Like, every time I would play any game that I even was, like, I never played any game competitively, but when I would become competitive at, like, you know, a party or a gathering or whatever, it just never would have occurred to me to be like, all right, let me figure out the spacing of these hitboxes, so how far... Our one mutual friend, Micah, was telling me, like, I forget what website he was looking at, but, like, the best shield in the game, because, you know, you can shield in Smash, is Yoshi's, because it's, like, one pixel bigger than everyone else's or something like that.
He was probably looking at Smashboards. Smashboards is the website for Smash games just in general. But spacing...
That's crazy.
Spacing isn't that that difficult. One of the things that's very difficult, like I was saying before, is talking about this without a visual context, but the next time that anybody who's listening to this plays a fighting game, just imagine an invisible line, a vertical line in between the two characters, just trying to gauge where you are on that line and where your opponent is, and figuring out the ranges from there. It was something that I believe I was naturally doing back when I was in second grade, like playing Soul Calibur 2 just against the computer. Something that I just naturally picked up.
I think that might be why I never picked up, because I never owned fighting games. Like, all my games were, like, 3D platformers. Right. So, like, my friend Justin, he could dominate at, like, 2D, you know, Super Mario, Mega Man, all that old stuff, old school stuff. But, like, if you give me, like, a Donkey Kong 64 or, like, any of the Ratchet and Clanks and Jak and Daxters, like, any 3D platformer, I'm pretty good at it, like, naturally, just because that's what I played growing up. So, like, you're saying you... grew up playing fighting games to an extent. Like, obviously, it wasn't the only thing you played.
Pretty much, but it gave honestly.
Oh, really?
I mean, I played a few other games, but it was kind of the exact opposite of what you're talking about. When it comes to platformers, or basically any story-esque game, I'm pretty bad at it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not... puzzle games, I'm pretty terrible at. The puzzle embedded in a fighting game in terms of learning your opponent's style and stuff, that's the thing that really interests me and that I've gotten good at. When it's a static, when it's just there, a type of puzzle game, I'm not going to be able to figure it out.
See, it's really funny. So, I was talking about our friend Micah before. He'd go in the game room and beat some of the better players in the game room. Like at times, like he wasn't the best one in there by far, he got really decent and pretty good. I remember, and he could never beat my one friend Jamie, no matter what. Jamie would go in there and get his ass handed to him by everyone that Micah could constantly beat.
Mm-hmm.
But because Jamie knew Micah, because he's been playing him for so long, he knows what Micah's, like, how Micah thinks, so he can just counter against it no matter what. And it's kind of funny that overall, Jamie's not a better player than him, but he just knows Micah so much better. So, I know it's kind of a bizarre segue into it, but does, like, knowing, I mean, when you play competitively, just knowing your opponent even more, like, from playing them a whole bunch of times, does that help you out a lot? Or does it, like, how can I say this? How do you get to know your opponent when it's the first time you're ever playing them? Like, how can you figure out, like, what their thought process would be?
Well, my strategy has always been sticking my opponent into 3 or 4 situations that I can then extrapolate into 10 or 12. And putting them at slight frame disadvantage or a slight frame advantage. What do I do if I just back up? What do I do if I'm just in his face the whole time? Just putting him into those kinds of situations and gauging what his style is from there. It's funny that you talk about the dynamism between certain players, because that's one of the things that I really enjoy about fighting games. So, for instance, if I can beat Pete in a game and Pete can beat Josh in a game, therefore, I should be able to beat Josh, but that's not necessarily so. And that kind of goes not just with Micah and Jamie, but it happens with everybody. There are just certain players who naturally can beat other players, and styles that kind of a rock, paper, scissors type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that I really enjoy is that, unlike with like a puzzle game with other video games, it's not static. It's dealing with a human mind. And that's always been the thing. Cracking the shell of a person is the thing that I always found to be the most interesting. And it always changes every single time.
Even the somebody, same person you played
at the I've time played time. Some people for years and years, or the people I've played the most, and it's a new experience every time I play against them.
So, like, Pete, I remember, like, I totally lost where I was going with this.
I'm sorry, Josh.
That's okay.
Did you want me to keep talking?
I don't know. No, I was going to say, Pete, some of your experiences, you mostly played with Brawl, though, right?
That was No, I'd never...
I always think of the story you told me when you were at one of the anime conventions tournaments, and you played Snake the whole time and wrecked, like, all these great players.
So when I played Melee at Monco, I was like, I would classify myself as what the community in every fighting game calls, which is a scrub, somebody who understands the concepts of how the game works, but I don't play enough or am just not good enough to really compete on any kind of a competitive level. So like in Melee, I would understand the concepts of how to play, but I never put the time or the effort in to actually get good. So through luck, or just it's not a serious competitive setting at school, you can beat people. When Brawl came out, Brawl is, because Melee was never intended to be a competitive game, it was intended to be a party game to play with people, that a player base of people managed to turn into a competitive game by figuring out the mechanics and figuring out glitches in the game like wave dashing. The guy who designs the Smash Brothers games didn't want Brawl to be, he doesn't want Smash to be a competitive game, he doesn't like competitive gaming communities, because they tend to be immature.
It since has changed with Smash 4. The Nintendo has gotten involved into the Smash competitive community. But yeah, back when Brawl came out, it was specifically made, it was designed to be more random, to be more of a party game, and to not be played competitively.
Hence why they had that big ultimate move power-up that you could... I mean, they gave you the option to turn
there
it
was
off.
That, there was also tripping that would happen randomly.
Tripping is your story about... Jay had a story about how he thought people would react to seeing Brawl when it went to Evo, which is a national tournament. And, like, Brawl got to be there the 1 year. I don't know how often it was still there. But
1 year.
Yeah, 1 year. So it was there. And Jay would make a joke about, like, let's say, I don't know, a Tekken or a Street Fighter player walking over and seeing Brawl and be like, oh, what's this game? Oh, this is Super Smash Bros. Like, this looks cool. And then a character randomly on the screen would just fall down. They'd be like, what was that? What just happened? Oh, that's tripping. Tripping? What is that? Oh, it just happens randomly. Random? Like, it just makes sense.
So this game is a waste of time? Goodbye.
Yeah.
So I really hope this podcast evolves into just a variety of different stories.
I was kind of hoping that would happen at some point, but, like, kind of have it at least a little bit where it's like, here's our Smash stories. Here's
Well, when you program that into that game, that does take a huge edge out, because let's say somebody is way better than me, but they happen to trip at the wrong time for no reason. They could lose.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a lot of skill and planning out of the game.
Yeah, Brawl took a lot of the execution from Melee and took it out. So somebody who practices for 12 hours versus somebody who practices for no hours, there's nothing that the 12-hour person can really have over the other guy.
Yeah.
Spacing is still a big thing, but in terms of execution and speed and certain matchup kinds of things, you could get it a little bit, and I'm sure that there are people that would disagree. But for the most part, Brawl just wasn't really made for it to be a competitive game. And,
it kind of makes sense. I remember everyone in the game room was kind of like, this isn't... Like, they still played it all the time, but it was... Yeah. Just wasn't, you know, competitive anymore.
Yeah, it really wasn't.
And the story you were asking about, the example was, this was within, I believe, the first month Brawl had come out. So, you know, people already had their doubts about it, but nobody really knew to the extent of how unlike Melee this game was. And there was a tournament that me and Jay and a bunch of other people from the Monco Game Room went to in Scranton. And to give you an idea of how different Brawl is than Melee. So, again, I consider myself, like, middle of the pack compared to, like, most people. I'm not that good. When I went to this tournament, me and Chris, who was really good, got second place in the team tournament just because I played Snake, who in that game, I don't know how people have figured things out, but at the time
he was like the second best character.
He was like he was an amazing character. He was the only character that I played, and his, like, part of the reason is his hitboxes are ridiculous.
The size of the sun.
Yeah. So he'll do a move where he does a knee, and then if you hit the button again, he does like an overhand, like double fist, like Captain Kirk move.
Yeah.
The knee will hit you even when his knee isn't physically touching your character at all because of the hitboxes.
If there's somebody playing Brawl in the house next to us right now and they're playing Snake, we might feel it over here. That's actually true.
So not only that, so that move, he also has an insane amount of power. So he has power on the level of heavier characters. And Snake himself is a heavy character, meaning in those games where your objective is to knock somebody off the stage, the distance you knock them away depends on their health percentage and how heavy the character is. So somebody like Bowser, you need to get him to a higher percentage.
Because he's a heavy character.
To knock him farther away.
But also emotionally, they're very deep.
Yeah.
Very
deep philosophical. He's been through a lot.
Yeah, but really is. Same with Bowser, honestly.
So somebody like Snake has ridiculous reach. He actually has surprisingly quick moves compared to characters of his weight. So you need to get him to a very high percentage to kill him. His recovery is absurd because of his cipher that he carries on to. And just his hitboxes and damage are, like, he's the best, at the time, he was the best of everything. There was no reason not to play Snake unless you played Meta Knight, who was just broken.
And because of his, like, beam of the
there was a variety of reasons. I mean, he was really the best in virtually every way. He had tons of power, he had incredible speed, fantastic recovery, tons of hitboxes, and he stayed the best character up until the end of the game.
Who, did someone actually usurp Meta Knight at some
never.
Point?
He never. Has like, not, if not, I'm not mistaken, he the has last unpunishable moves, right?
Yeah, pretty much. In the last top 8 I saw, which was about 2 years ago, this is before Smash 4 came out, I believe 6 of the top 8 played Meta Knight. And that's sure crazy. Enough, and that's the thing, that's how I always classified a character to be a little bit overpowered. I'm not normally the kind of guy who likes to ban characters or consider characters overpowered, because I just think that that's a matter of complaining, and so you just have to get used to it. There's always going to be the best character of a game. If you ban that character, then the next best character is always going to be the best. And so rather than complaining, I always think about working towards beating that. When it comes to Meta Knight, and when it comes to a character that inundates the meta in terms of, like, the characters that you're expecting to see at a tournament.
It is the meta.
Yeah. Heyo. Whenever a character just overwhelms the character availability pool of a tournament, that's when I think it gets a little extreme.
Yeah. That makes sense. If every top player is practically, you know, like you said, 6 out of the 8 were Meta Knight, that says something.
6 of the top 6 were Meta Knight as well.
Yeah. I mean, that says something. Well, and like you said, though, it really wasn't meant to be a competitive game, so it kind of makes sense why Meta Knight was so broken.
To get back to that story, though, so me and Chris got second place with me literally not even taking the game seriously. I would put a C4 on Chris and detonate him for no reason, and you could just move across the screen doing Snake's tilt move that I described, because it'll hit anything and everything.
Yeah, it was a lot like your relationship with Chris just in real life as well.
I would just put C4 on him. I would punch him in the face.
His face never really recovered from the last one.
So
does he look like Voldemort now? Or actually, well, that's only a nose.
Well,
missing.
He doesn't have a quote-unquote face per se anymore. It's really just kind of like a graft of red skin. It's kind of like, it's just muscle and sinew, I guess.
He's like a smaller version of one of those Attack on Titan monsters.
Yeah. But just his face. His face in and of itself.
So he
like
still
an
has
Attack
hair and everything, but there's just no.
Not on his head. Everywhere else.
It starts immediately at his neck.
Yeah, just he's goes just down. Got like Italian hair all over.
Yeah.
So playing around, which was fun, and people thought it was funny. Like, we got second place, which should never happen.
Chris didn't think it was funny. Chris was actually serious.
Yeah, I mean,
injured.
Yeah, that part wasn't so funny. No.
I mean, it was funny
for me, it was. Yeah.
No, yeah, it was.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
So that was the team tournament, and then afterwards there was a singles tournament. So just 1v1 matchups, which is, you know, the real, like, meat of most fighting games. And he's gonna get that fly.
Sorry, there's a cat.
So
there's a fly.
So as the tournament's going on, we're all progressing at various levels, and I forget if who had like some of us were getting knocked out, some of us kept progressing, and I remember watching Chris was versing some guy who I later found out in Melee was like one of the top players in our state.
Yeah.
Like, he was really, really good in Melee, better than Chris in Melee, and I'm watching their brawl match. And it was pretty close, and Chris lost. And I had no idea. I was like, oh, that's pretty crazy. and then I had to verse that guy
next. It's very rare that Chris loses amongst us, so it's interesting to see.
So watching him lose, I was like, uh-oh, like, I have to verse this person, like, I mean, like, I'm not going to win. And I won, I beat this person, and it wasn't even that close, because regardless of this person's skill in Melee, Brawl is such a different game, and there's such a competitive edge taken out from everything that Jay's described. Me and him are pretty much on even level. In fact, I probably had an advantage just from picking Snake as a character compared to whoever he had played at the time.
You know, it's kind of funny, because one of the other things that I think is interesting is that the mentality that he went into, that Pete went into, to face this better opponent is one of my favorite mentalities in going into a tournament game. It's I'm expecting to lose, which means I don't have anything to lose. So if I lose, everybody expects it. Yeah. If I win, it's fantastic. The other guy has everything to lose. He's the one with the reputation to uphold. Yeah. And so I think you would be surprised at how much of an advantage your mental state gave you over that guy. So it might not necessarily be Snake. I'm trying to give you more confidence. You were a much better player than you think you were.
Well, you're lowering my confidence, but I appreciate...
Why am I lowering your confidence? Why would you do that to me?
That got awkward fast.
Yeah.
Maybe you should leave.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
Oh, there goes... Oh, no, he's
back. The pretty much the last story I have, now that he's gone, about Brawl, is that after I verse that and beat that guy, and I do agree that, yeah, that probably did give me an advantage, that mental state, because a lot of times you can psych your... So much of anything competitive is... like, in your head of how you're thinking about something. Anything competitive, whether it's gaming or physical sports, anything like that, you can psych yourself out, you can make mistakes you would never normally make.
Jumanji.
Yeah.
It gets serious. You make a lot of mistakes in Jumanji.
Jay just came back from the jungle.
Yeah,
sometimes if you roll, you know, in the jungle, you must wait.
The dice reads five or whatever.
But the last story, it's not even anything competitive. I guess it would be a taste of... Yeah, and this person is no representation of a community, but the kinds of things you could expect to possibly run into is...
Well, he gave you a lot of shit about it.
No, right? The guy I beat that beat Chris, he was very nice. He was pretty standard of... Normally, when you sit down to do a game, you know, you'll shake the other person's hand.
You'll shake him down.
Shake him down.
You'll make sure they don't have any
weapons. Make sure he doesn't have any guns, yeah.
So you shake his hand, you know, good luck, and then you play, and then when it's over, like, you know, good match. Regardless of how frustrated you are, you usually try and be nice, you know? That was a good match. You might, in your head, be screaming at yourself and being really irritated, but show courtesy. Like, you lost. That's what happened. So, next round, I sit down, and this other guy sits down, and we're picking characters, and I pick Snake, and he picks Diddy Kong. And I go to be like, all right, man, like, good luck. And he's like, why don't you pick a character that doesn't spam projectiles? And, like, you can pick whoever I play. And I was like, well, all I play is Snake. That's all I... He's the only character I'm going to play. He's like, all right, man, like, whatever. And then, so we play. I was like, all right, that's an odd...
Yeah, we're already starting
off on... I'm already a little on edge from this guy, because that's a real dick thing to do.
Yeah.
This is literally my introduction to this person. I've never seen them before. So we play, and it goes all the way to the very end. It's very, very close, very intense match, and I lost. And I turn around and go, good game, man. I put my hand out, and he gets in my face and yells at me and goes... I forget exactly what he said, but he was yelling at me about how bad I was, how he was so much better because he wasn't spamming projectiles, and all I did was spam projectiles, which...
He was Diddy Kong. Well, he has projectiles, the peanut poppers.
Before we get to that...
He has the best projectiles in the game, yeah.
When I play Snake, it's not about projectiles. If I use anything as Snake, you lob a grenade to escape, or... that's pretty much it, actually. Maybe the mortar when somebody's above you. Other than that, with Snake... you're mainly using his melee tilts. So if anything, Diddy Kong does have more... But whatever, the point is that he got in my face and yelled at me and was being really rude, which just kind of confused me. I didn't really know how to react. I couldn't say anything. I just had a very bewildered look on my face. And then as he was yelling at me, he noticed the group of friends that we went with, which was like Jay, Stefan, who is a very big and intimidating person.
Yes.
And like Chris and like three other people all looking at this guy being like, what are you doing? So he looked very nervous from that as he just backed away out of the building.
Yeah, he tried to play it off very, very coolly, but eventually it was quite literally he was hiding behind somebody.
Yeah. And to the point where Chris described it that guy went outside and smoked the most stressful cigarette of his life. And again, there was no reason for any of that. He won. I was willing to accept that. Like, I lost. but
there are certain people who just can't handle things appropriately.
Jay, the one overreaction story you told me, the guy like got so mad, like what did he do to his controller?
Oh, that was Carlin told me the story where he beat this person, and the person got up. He had a very serious face, and he unplugged his controller. He started wrapping it up really, really, really quickly. And the second he got finished, there was like a moment. And then immediately just destroyed the, just shoved the controller onto the floor. Just destroyed it. It's like, why wrap it up? Why wrap up the controller? You were so prepared. And then you had everything under control. You were so reserved. And then you ruined it. You ruined everything.
Did you not want to take the console with him?
To finish up that Scranton story, though. so afterwards, that kid had a match against somebody else. And Chris made it a point to sit behind this kid and talk to his friend and discuss the philosophy of what projectiles actually are, because the one guy tried to defend Diddy Kong. We're like, no, they're not projectiles. They're more like yellow extensions of his body.
There is a literally an object leaving Diddy Kong's hitbox to create its own hitbox.
But needless to say, that guy lost. And if anything, it made for a funny story. But that's the kind of hostility you can rarely, like, sometimes run into.
It's the only time I've ever encountered that kind of hostility is in the Smash community.
Really?
And I've been out of it for 5-7 years now.
Maybe it's changed, but yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about Smash a lot, so I figured we should move on.
Enough about Smash already.
Let's talk about Soul Calibur. I mean, I know you did a little bit in Street Fighter, but I figured we've already been going a pretty decent amount of time, so let's talk about Soul Calibur, the one that you are currently playing competitively in.
Okay.
So you did Soul Calibur 4 and 5. What type of strategies did you have to use playing Soul Calibur 4 and 5? I know, like you said, Smash isn't really much of a fighting game, like it is and it isn't type of thing. So what is the big difference, other than the fact that it's like it's only one-on-one versus a group type of thing? Most of the times in Smash it was one-on-one if you're doing a singles tournament.
Yeah.
But what were some other big differences?
Biggest difference in Soul Calibur is that it's 3D. There's multiple planes of movement that you had to be able to master.
Oh, so wait, I'm thinking it's not just like on a
2D screen.
It's not like Street Fighter.
Yeah, Tekken and Soul Calibur are the 3D games. Those are the Namco games.
Okay.
Yeah, and Soul Calibur is different in the sense that it's also a weapon fighter. So you get a little bit more of a personality out of the characters that, at least in my opinion, you're getting a little bit more of the character personality. It's more aesthetically pleasing to me.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of ring outs, but also there's a set amount of moves that everybody has. Some of them are good and some of them are bad. And so you have to, there's a lot of bulk memorization. You have to memorize attack strings, moves that definitely come after other moves. Highs, whether you can duck these moves, whether you can GI these moves. GI stands for guard impact. That's the Soul Calibur equivalent of a parry.
Okay.
Stuff like that. And so Soul Calibur is just the same kind of fighting game fundamentals, but hyped up into a real fighting game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my biggest problems with, not saying that it is an issue with fighting games, so the reasons why I don't like them, or I shouldn't say I don't like them, why I'm not good at them, is because...
It's alright if you don't like them.
I like them to a degree, but like...
I'm offended.
Oh.
He gets offended very easily. He's very offended at how offended he gets.
It's not a lie.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that circle of logic.
Don't. You might offend me even.
It's a tricky situation.
But so... it's because of all the different combinations and strengths. Because I'll look at like the combinations, even back to like the Super Nintendo games when the combinations were a lot less in depth, exactly. Even then, it was just kind of like, this is so much. Like, how do people memorize this stuff? And then, like you said, it's a lot of bulk memorization. There's a lot to each character to memorize.
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, for one, I will say that Namco games, namely Tekken and Soul Calibur, are a lot more about memorizing those types of strengths. There's just a lot more moves than, say, a Street Fighter game has. But and so it does kind of favor somebody who has played previous versions of it, because some strengths don't really change. Some characters just continue to be in every single game. And so if you already have a little bit of an understanding of what this character is about, chances are you'll have already at least a little bit of an understanding for a new game. But that being said, it's really not that difficult. I mean, it's no different than any other kind of skill that you're trying to hone. I mean, you know, how does somebody get good at a piano? It's a lot of bulk memorization. It's a lot of practice. I mean, fighting games are no different than any other type of thing that you're trying to do. It's a lot of practicing. It's a lot of, you got to put in your 10,000 hours.
So what would be like the big, like you were saying, it goes from 2D to 3D in terms of spacing and things like that. How do you, like, what kind of strategies do you use for 3D versus 2D? Because to me, that seems like it's so much, like you said, that's adding a third plane. So it's going to be incredibly different.
I'll let you talk.
It's different just in terms of maybe there's a little bit more to it. You could argue that it's a little bit more complicated, but the idea is pretty much the same. You're just corralling your opponent into a position to where their movement is limited. You're waiting for them to screw up, or you're trying to press them so that they make a mistake. It's really just about spacing. It's still about, you know, trying to hit your opponent until their light bar goes down to zero. There's really no difference in terms of like getting them to a corner or pressuring them in a particular way. All right,
that's kind of interesting to me though, because like I would never have thought of that. The whole strategy in almost every fighting game is to get, like, whether it's metaphorically or literally, corner your opponent into something that you can easily manage anything they can possibly do in the situation.
Yeah, you want to limit your opponent's options as much as possible. I mean, that's basically, if you were to generalize it to such a crazy degree, I believe that that is the goal of literally every character in literally every fighting game, is to just work your opponent's mind down to where they don't really feel like they can do anything, they feel suffocated in one way or another. Either they can't get in, or they can't keep you out, and yeah.
The concepts are, like, what he's talking about with spacing and everything like that, is it applies through all fighting games, whether they're 3D or 2D, and a prime example of, if you have the basics of the concept of the principles in a fighting game, you should be able to sit down and be okay-ish at any game after a few plays. Like,
that's basically true.
From the time I don't really play Soul Calibur as much. I've played it a few times, but I can't even come anywhere close to what Jay is. But most of my time was spent with a 2D fighter like Street Fighter. But when I play Soul Calibur, I still have a concept of what I'm supposed to be doing and how I'm supposed to move. I don't have the technical execution. I don't have the knowledge of the moves of what I should be doing. But with general knowledge, you can still, like, play the game properly, and you can still, to a point, like, maybe have an edge on somebody. A prime example would be our friend Kevin, who was, like, I would just say, like, a savant at fighting games. I guess he's just played them so much.
Well, also, he's just played them so much. I mean, he talked about being in a laundromat when he was 6 years old playing, like, the original Street Fighter, and I mean, you can't compete with that amount of experience, like, having it that ingrained when you were a child.
Yeah.
You know? So, he naturally picks up games really quickly. And the more you play fighting games, the more you play one fighting game, the better that you're gonna get in fighting games in general.
Yeah. So, like, what kind of, like, for me, like, or not for me, but, like, what I've kind of heard and stuff like that, is there a lot of, like, I don't know if it's the right term, but like frame counting, where you know, like, it goes in relation to timing, where like you know how many frames or how long it takes for a move to be executed, kind of like the out cancel, where you could, like, what kind of things are you able to use in Soul Calibur in Soul Calibur like that? Like, how do you, like, what do you actually have to, like, do that kind of timing?
It's best that you know that. It's best that you know frame data for both your character and your opponent's character. Should I explain what frames are?
People who listen to us, I would assume no, but I would, you know, I mean, I feel like a lot of these questions, people who do know fighting games are like, oh, he's stupid, why is he asking these? But, like, I'll be honest, I am stupid on this topic, I know nothing.
Well, unaware, I'm, like, not really sure if stupid is that.
He's pretty dumb.
I mean, you're pretty stupid, but in this particular topic, you're just ignorant. So you're ignorant and stupid.
Willfully ignorant.
Yeah. Yeah, so explain, like, what the idea of frames and frame counting are for those who don't know.
Frames are just a unit of measurement that are used to classify fighting game moves. The idea is that you have, like, three different types of frames when you're talking about a move. You have the startup frames, which is how long it takes a move to have hitboxes where it's going to be active from the second that you input it on your controller to when it happens on the screen. Second is the amount of frames the active frames, how often or how long the move has hitboxes. So not just for, like, the split second, but, you know, for how long it has a hitbox till eventually it stops. And then the cooldown frames, where a move has happened, now it no longer is active, and your opponent or your character is resetting his position, and you can do something again.
See, I wasn't even thinking that. When I thought frames, the first thing I thought of, you know, like, you know, movies show it, you know, 26 frames per second or whatever. Yeah. However, I mean, see, that's what I was literally talking about. A frame is just a still image, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the same idea with games. I had no idea that it got technical down. We use it as
a unit of measurement.
Well, it makes sense to use it as, because it'll be constant
to
a degree, depending on if the frame rate drops. But, like, to time it down to the idea that, like, you know how many frames it is until a hitbox appears for your attack.
Yeah.
How many frames the hitbox stays up. That I wouldn't even thought of. Like, that's crazy.
I have generalized ideas. For Soul Calibur specifically, because a lot of the game is about punishing and, you know, making your opponent do something that's unsafe and then punishing it accordingly. So frames are good in terms of what is unsafe. And then, like, that's the main thing. And then two, what's the highest amount of damage that I can get out of this punish? Once you have that stuff down, a lot of stuff kind of like fall. Like that's getting your basics down. And then once you have that, then you can really go into like the next levels of like mind games and getting into your opponent's head.
Do you have like now? Are there certain combinations? I mean, I feel like this should be like a question, like maybe a stupid question, but like, are there certain combinations like in terms of like, all right, I'm going to hit this, and like hit certain things so it achieves a certain outcome that you constantly fall back to? Are there like
a combo?
Yeah, well, it's a combo, but are there, like, what's the what's the one that you find that you use the most, or would that be revealing too much of your strategy?
We don't have to reveal secrets like I'm a magician or something, but
well, you know,
put your mask on. You don't want anybody to know.
Yeah, exactly. But it's really that really depends on the person that I'm playing against. There's nothing that I really rely on for each and every person that I play against, other than if I'm playing against somebody who's really just doesn't really know what they're doing, then you can just rely on just going on cruise control and just let them kill themselves, essentially. They just make mistake after mistake, and you just punish them accordingly, and then you just back up and you let them do it again. But for every single person, it's different, depending on what their style is, and depending on what kind of situations I want to reset to.
Yeah. All right, so what would be... Do you have any stories from, like, your time in the Soul Calibur community? Funny, interesting, that kind of thing?
You know, it's
none of them are very interesting.
Yeah, it's really funny. The Soul Calibur community is the most uninteresting community in the whole world. I don't have a single... I've been in the community for 5 years now, and I have no stories.
Is it like the nothing from the never-ending
story? It's very much like the nothing from the never-ending story. Or like just... It's essentially like a black void of time. Like I'll go to a tournament and then I'll remember like going there, and then I'll be coming out of the hotel and I'll think to myself, where am I? How much time has passed? Has it been a day? Has it been 40 years? Do I have a big white beard? You know,
is Rumpelstiltskin style here?
Have I become Rumpelstiltskin?
That's which has happened.
That's a question I ask myself every day when I wake up.
How many times have you been interviewed and asked that you were have you become Rumpelstiltskin?
It's not really something that a lot of people hit on. And I think that that's really a credit to you as an interviewer. It's not really something that a lot of people talk about. And honestly, I don't understand why Rumpelstiltskin talk doesn't come up more in generalized politics and social dynamics in America today, honestly.
It is a forgotten topic.
Yeah, it's really bad. To forget the RT, the Rumpelstiltskin talk.
The RT. Wouldn't that be RS? Rumpelstiltskin?
Talk.
Oh, talk. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
Get your fucking head in the
game. Sometimes you nail things on the head, but other times, geez.
Yeah, it just goes right over. Sometimes I get nailed in the head.
Yeah,
I mean, that explains a lot.
Sometimes we will put a nail and we'll drive it into your head.
Yeah, you know, just, well, that's what friends do for each other.
Sometimes. When it's necessary.
But, all right, I don't really have too much more. Do you guys have anything you really want to talk
about?
Should
I plug anything? Or I'm not sure like what, how much time.
Do you
it's
have
time
anything?
For the plug.
Do you have anything to plug?
I mean, I do.
Well, then plug it.
That's totally okay.
Yes, by all means.
So I have a YouTube channel where I go into Soul Calibur games, where it's kind of like if you've ever seen like a chess match, like analysis over a chess match, where it's like, okay, this guy did this move and then the other person did that move, and the reason why they did that, yeah, exactly, but I'm not doing it in real time. I'm able to go back, I'm able to kind of like go back and like look at certain things. I try to describe certain situations, like he has three options here and these are the ways that I beat these three options, and so like figuring that kind of stuff out. My YouTube profile is Clowns Whip Muffins, WIT Muffins. If you wanted to learn about Soul Calibur in general, 8wayrun.com, the number 8wayrun.com, shoryuken.com, that's another great fighting game website. But yeah, fighting games are a lot of fun. Not just fighting games, but like I find game theory has been one of the biggest passions of my life, honestly. It's the reason why I like fighting games as opposed to other games, and I talked about it earlier, is just the idea is that it's always dynamic because you're dealing with a human being. You're always trying to get into somebody's head, and there's honestly nothing more rewarding in my life than getting it to the point where I can make my opponent do not just a move when I want them to, but I know exactly which move they're going to do. And it's a very rewarding experience.
That's crazy. It's almost like a bizarre form of mind control.
Yeah, to a certain extent. And it's a very rewarding and satisfying experience when you can get to that level and do that type of thing. And I've always enjoyed games. I've lost money on Stratego. I've played competitive card games, board games, and obviously fighting games. Games just in general are
now
one of my favorite things.
Now, I know this is a bit off the fighting game topic, but have you played any RTSs competitively at all?
Unfortunately, no. Despite the fact that they are easily the most popular and get you easily the most money. I just simply... I've never been a computer game type of player to that extent. And also, I'm not very good with my hands. I'm not very good in terms of my execution. With
fighting, only have, one hand?
One and a half, really. I've got, like, the nub, you know? It's got two fingers, but those two fingers will fuck you up. They're very agile. But so I try to, when I play fighting games...
Now, I know this is important. Uh-huh. Which two fingers are, is it?
The left one and the right one. When you only have two, it's hard to, like, discern, like, would this be the middle or would this be the pointer?
Well, what
can
would
you,
it
like,
have been?
Stop being so insensitive about my
stop
hand?
Stop looking at his hand, first of all.
You've been staring at it since I got here.
It's a little hard to not look at it.
A little?
I mean,
little
you're
hard.
Still bleeding. Like, did this happen yesterday?
Listen, I'm getting very dizzy, so I'm not entirely sure I understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. But, like, can we just finish this up so that I can attend to this situation?
Okay,
my hands are so big.
I'm so thankful you decided to come in here to record this before you went to the hospital.
I felt that it was my obligation to do something.
I mean,
thing,
you set the appointment, and God...
I
mean, I
set the appointment.
Before you go,
I
clean up the blood, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not going to be able to do that. Because every time I clean it up, the more blood is going to come out, and it's just going to be a never-ending cycle.
Well, it's going to need to stop at some point.
I'm sure you'll be able to handle it. I mean, or at least the cat.
We can find a bucket
it.
Or
yeah,
something.
The cat
find.
Is bright red. He's like a
bucket
fire truck.
Get it off of the floor.
Well, I meant to just take a bucket and you just throw it on the floor.
What a job well done.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I meant like you could get the...
We know what you meant.
We know what you meant.
Well... All right, we'll just
what
use
was
the
your,
chat.
What was your initial question? I forget.
I don't remember.
Oh, for RTSs, I'm just not very good with my hands. When I play fighting games, I play the characters that take the least amount of execution, and yeah. I just try to, like, I try to do everything in my head and try to leave as little responsibility in my hands as possible. So with RTSs, I find that you really need to be able to do a whole lot.
I mean, I never really played competitively with RTSs, but like... I mean, I know, like I said, this is way off the fighting game topic, so this is kind of...
It's good games
that,
in general.
It's good that it's at the end of the podcast as opposed to, like, somewhere in the middle.
At some point, we should just have a podcast just about games in general. I'd be more than happy to come on again.
Oh, yeah, we'll eventually do that.
Yeah, gaming... It doesn't necessarily have to be about fighting games. I love games just
well,
overall.
I just know that's, like, your expertise. That's why I wanted
to
have
extent,
you on.
Yeah.
But no, like, with RTS is the big thing. It's not necessarily, like... Like, the combos in RTSs are they're going to be planned out well in advance, mm-hmm. as opposed to fighting games, which I assume is very in the moment, because it's so... Because fighting games only last, like, 30 seconds to a minute, usually.
For each
like,
round,
for
yeah,
each
you
round.
Could, you could say that, yeah.
So, you kind of have to, like, be able to execute those strategies at a moment's notice. With RTSs, it's all about the setup, and then hopefully the payoff will be an actual payoff.
Right.
Usually what I've seen, like, as I used to watch, like, StarCraft, I watch StarCraft competitive games. I'm nowhere near good enough to play competitively.
Likewise. StarCraft or StarCraft 2?
StarCraft 2.
Oh, okay. I was talking about
I did watch a little bit of StarCraft. It was hard for me to find competitive StarCraft 1 videos on YouTube for a little while.
They're all in, Korean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would watch them anyway.
Well, like, even just to watch, like, it was hard for me to find.
Oh, really? You should have talked to me. I was the YouTube master back in 2006. I knew where everything was.
But, like, with StarCraft 2.
He doesn't anymore, but he used to know.
No, I've forgotten that YouTube was a website.
What is, I mean, can he even internet anymore?
I haven't interneted in... In a fortnight.
A fortnight.
Yeah.
No, so with RTSs, a lot of it's like you go into a match like kind of see knowing, because like a lot of it, it's
you have a build in mind.
Yeah, you have a build in mind, and then you have to execute that build, but you have to be able to, like, that's what the whole purpose of scouting is, so that way you can scout us and see what their build is and then counter it accordingly.
You could argue the same thing happens in fighting games, but it happens on a much smaller scale and a much faster.
Yeah.
But the same idea, I think, would uphold both ways.
We should just play some RTS sometime. Not like online or something. Just
we should record them on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's totally audio.
We'll just have
two of us. This is totally not a visual.
You'll get the idea.
Yeah. We'll just be two people and then somebody else will commentate radio style.
Like but on, you like won't on, hear like, the games.
Like on old horse races. Yeah.
You know what? I would just click on the Thor so you could hear as many Arnold impersonations as possible. Yeah. But all right, does anybody have anything left to plug, really? I mean,
You're looking to fall asleep at night, listen to Jay's YouTube channel.
Yeah.
it is a relaxing
The dulcet
lesson.
Tones of my voice are very hypnotic.
All right, guys, so thank you once again for listening, and we will see you in two
weeks.
Thanks
for having me.
Thank you for coming.